What up, everybody? Hoya Rock from Smoke AD. You're listening to Aftershocks TV, baby.
All right, Aftershocks TV, back for another episode this week. And look who I got with me joining me this week on these batch of episodes, Mr. Chris Aiken, the one and only. What's up, dude?
What's up, man? Glad to be doing this. I'm ready to talk some Thin Lizzy with you.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, well, a little different than with Tom on here, you know, with the Thin Lizzy. He loves his Thin Lizzy, that's for sure. But, yeah, I don't think we're going to do something a little different, obviously, on this episode. As you've got right behind you there, this great Cold Chamber logo. And is that from their last album, the album cover?
I'm not sure what that's from. Oh, I can't really see it. It's just some drawing that I found online. I just was like, yeah. I don't think it's Dark Days. It might just be from when they toured.
Like a touring thing or something. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you've got that behind him because, yeah, it's not so much even Cold Chamber we're digging into. We're going to dig into a little Fear Factory talk today. Yeah. Now, first thing, I don't know if you saw as we're recording this today, which is Friday, May the 10th. Burton C. Bell, the ex-Fear Factory singer, just put out there that he's going to be doing his first show, his first solo show in L.A. on June the 13th.
All right.
It's going to consist of it's going to be sort of a blend of everything he's done over the years. Fear Factory, Ascension of the Watchers. He's also going to do the Geezer stuff, the GZR.
Oh, nice.
He's throwing that in there. Yeah, and that City of Fire as well.
Okay.
He had that Vancouver band that he played with, they had that one album with. So, yeah, it's going to be a mix. And, of course, his new stuff. I mean, he put out that one song. I'm not a fan of it. I like industrial metal, but I don't like industrial music on its own.
You don't like an industrial diss track?
I don't mind a diss track because that's pretty much what it is. You know what I mean? But, in terms of the music, it wasn't very.
It was all right. I didn't hate it. I didn't necessarily hate it. I will say, I am pleasant. Now that you told me, I did not see this announcement, but now that you told me he's going to be playing the GZR stuff, now I'm intrigued to go see it.
Right.
Because I love Plastic Planet. That might be the best thing he's ever lent his voice to.
It's possible. You know, I agree, man.
It's so good. And most people probably don't even remember it anymore, but what a killer record that is. Now, he could leave the Ascension of the Watchers stuff home.
No, the first time especially,
It's a little sleepy and dreary. I mean, I'm curious, how do you think he works that in? If he's doing, Replica and, some GZR, and then how do you mix in some Ascension of the Watchers to that?
Well, he did say with Fear Factory it was going to be deep cuts. Now, that's interesting. I don't know what he means by the deep cuts.
Yeah, that might be for the first two or three shows until people don't show up.
Well, I'm with you. He's going to have to eventually be singing Replica every night and closing with that song pretty much if he wants to really get his a core audience in there for himself. I agree with that. But, what's interesting, he's going to work it in. I don't know. He calls it, it's a showcase. That's what he billed it as, is a showcase. So he's got a band. I think it's just he's trying it out. I think this is probably just one of those like, all right, let's give this a go, and hopefully fans respond well to it. But, I like how he's kind of doing what he's doing in terms of how he's, slowly breaking it out that way. Sure. I mean, instead of coming out going, hey, I got a band we're doing, but I think he's just trying to figure out. Like I said, both bands are, between him and then, Dino and quote unquote the Fear Factory band now, which is really just Dino and a bunch of other guys. Basically it's interesting how they're going to be doing this each, how they're going to, go about it, and that's what we're going to kind of dig into here. Now I'm going to bring up this, just this thing. I'm going to share this. Now Fear Factory has now announced that they're doing a tour with Cold Chamber.
Right.
Okay. I find this, it's also with Twisted. Wednesday 13, I think I see in there, right? And then Black Satellite. I don't know who that is either. Yeah. But I'm looking at this, let's just start from the beginning. What's kind of ironic about this it just shows you really the downfall of what's happened to the Fear Factory brand. You know, if you look at this, first of all, now here's Cold Chamber. Okay. Cold Chamber, a band that's put out four albums in what? In 25 years.
Yeah.
Last one was almost 10 years ago, 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously it's more of a side thing for Dez, you know,
Devil Driver's his thing.
Exactly. That's his main baby. And so Cold Chamber is just, you know, I get it. Look, new metals, the whole thing's back in. I think they just played the Sick New World Festival. And now they're doing this tour with Fear Factory. Now, the ironic thing though, dude, is that, I mean, Fear Factory is a band with 10 records, 10 albums.
Mm-hmm.
They have a game-changing album or two with Demanufacture and Obsolete. Those are complete classics. Oh,
yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, and now they are opening for Cold Chamber.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't make a ton of sense other than Cold Chamber. The advantage, I guess, Cold Chamber has is that they keep going away for a while. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw them in probably 15, I guess it was. It was them, Lacuna Coil, and Seven Dust.
Okay.
And it was great, but what filled the room was the fact that they hadn't done it in 10 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now it's been 7-8 years since they've done Cold Chamber again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's that, it's the same reason that Mudvayne is like, popular again. It's not because Mudvayne really...
Sure.
Changed the world when they were out. I mean, they're a good band. I like LD50 like everybody else. Mm-hmm. But what helped them was going away. You know, that's what's made them popular. Absolutely. Fear Factory's really never gone away. You know, and and their public bickering, quite honestly, look, you're the biggest hardcore Fear Factory person I know, and you've given up on them, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely.
You ain't alone, man. There's a lot of people that just are like, first of all, there's a lot of people that cannot see it without Burton.
Mm-hmm.
There's just, you could replace the other guys. You could release Christian. You could replace Christian, rather. You can replace anybody else, really. They replaced Dino, for God's sakes, and carried on. But you cannot replace Burton. Burton is too much of that sound. I don't care how much the new guy sounds close. He ain't Burton.
He's not. And listen, we all know that Burton, listen, Burton live, we get it. He's not great live. He's not. You know, he's 50-something, mid-50s.
Huh.
You know where you're going to be able to sing like that until your mid-50s. I get it. But exactly, man. It's just, I think this is becoming a harder, more difficult situation for Dino than he envisioned it. Now, what's killing me, too, about this, what's ironic, is, like I said, Fear Factory is the one who got Cold Chamber signed to Roadrunner Records.
That's true.
Dino got them signed. I mean, bottom line, you know, he's the one that discovered them and brought them over to Roadrunner.
Hold on. Stop right there for 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think this is a payback?
Well, I think it's a smart thing. You know, it makes sense. I mean, I think it makes sense. It's fine for Cold Chamber and Fear Factory to go out together. Mm-hmm. But when I see Twisted and I see Wednesday 13, you see, and this is my other argument here, too. Now it's like, okay, now I have a little bit of like, okay. And this is the problem with Fear Factory that they've had over the years, especially now. I mean, so Fear Factory, let's see. This is a band that started out as a death metal band, right? We go to the very beginnings. Okay, then you get to Demanufacture. All right, more groove metal, industrial metal, just that 90s metal, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the vein of a Prong, of a Sepultura, and of a Pantera. They were in that vernacular with those bands.
Sure.
In the mid-90s. Now, when they got to the later part of the 90s, Obsolete came out, had a, you know, a hit or two, I mean, especially when they tried doing when they did the Cars, you know, song.
Yeah,
you know, they did that on the side, and they attached it to the, you know, to that album.
Obsolete,
you know?
Right?
Yeah, and so that it was their first, of course, attempt to try to get more commercialized, and then of course, then came Digimortal a few years later, which was complete new metal for the most part. But they went right back pretty much after that. Okay, I mean, they experimented without Dino in there. They were not that no man's land where everybody was in the mid-2000s, and then they came back with, you know, was it Mechanized? When they had Gene Hoglan on the drums, we're gonna be a brutal fucking metal band again, which they were. Okay, great. And then we saw with some of the most recent albums, went back to more of a Demanufacture Obsolete record sound. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine, that's great. But now you're touring with the Twisteds and the Wednesday 13s. you know, what is it? What I think they've got going on right now more than anything is they are so, not only is the brand just getting just watered down and diminished by the minute, but they're having an identity crisis on who the fuck they are as a band and who they're going to play with. You know, like, I'll just take an example. All right, let's look at a band. Like I said, I'll look at one of those bands I was mentioned before, Prong. Yeah, if you look at Prong and even Sepultura, right? Those are bands that all, of course, have altered their sound as well over the years.
Sure.
You know, funny, right? Mm-hmm. But if you look at what Prong has done, I'll just use them, okay? Okay, recently they toured with, okay, Voivod, right? Well, they were another sort of odd band in their genre with thrash, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
Okay, kind of makes sense. Both bands that experiment a lot, so forth. Then when I saw Prong a handful of years before that live, they went on tour with Power Flow and this other band, Cutthroat, which is more of a hardcore band, you know?
Okay.
Okay, so Power Flow, we see, all right, well, now they talk about 90s stuff, and okay, more in the new metal vernacular there, too, because you got Sendog from Cypress Hill and Christian for Fear. Okay, but Prong was they're open that tour, and it was more just a smaller West Coast tour. It wasn't a whole, you know, U.S. tour like this is.
Right.
The thing I'm watching, so they have at least, you know, they're at least headlining those ones, and when they're opening for Voivod, they actually shared the, I guess, the,
yeah, it's like the split, each of them play an hour 15 or whatever,
yeah, or each took turns opening. Okay. like Prong headlined in I think Seattle, but then Voivod headlined down here. I guess whoever had a bigger, you know, fan base in that market, exactly, so forth. Right. You know, and then when they were supposed to tour a couple years ago with Armored Saint, okay, they were going to be the openers for Armored Saint. That was an interesting kind of a weird one, but again, you know, at least it's a classic metal band. The thing with Fear Factory, like I said, is it looks like they're going back to their now new metal. This is where they want to attach themselves to. Mm-hmm. Because I'm going to bring up another thing now here, too. All right. And this is because this just happened. We talked about, what was it? The Sick New World Festival, right? That just happened 2 weeks
300
ago.
300 bands, five stages.
Yeah, exactly. That's a ridiculous thing here. Now, okay, let's look at that. Okay. All right. See, System of a Down, Slipknot, Fear Factory. Where's Fear Factory? Oh, they're all the way down here in this little logo next where? To. You see where my
I don't. I don't see them.
Okay. All the way down to the bottom left when you're looking. The okay. second line up to the left next to Wednesday 13. Below, like right next to Trash Talk, Quanek. Who are these fucking bands?
Wow.
Right? I barely even noticed they played until I just kind of saw that at the corner of my eye when I was looking at this a week or two ago. I'm like, holy shit. They are way down there with all the no-name bands, pretty much. Yeah.
Drop 19's Trash Talk.
You know, at least if you look at the one up above it, you have Taproot, Nonpoint, Power Man 5000. Okay.
But see, Fear I would Factory. Stop right there, though. Fear Factory was way bigger than right? those three.
Yeah.
And they were definitely bigger than Coma Christ.
Absolutely.
And they're definitely bigger than Dope.
Absolutely. Absolutely, dude.
Dude, I'm trying to go up to where they stop being bigger than the bands. They're bigger than Frontline Assembly.
I mean, you've got
Nitzer Ebb,
which is not even a rock band. They were like an industrially new wave band.
I've never heard of what is this band? She Passed Away?
I have no idea. But you know what is ironic? You say in Frontline Assembly. You know, the funny thing is the guy, Reese Fulber from Frontline Assembly, he's like the sixth member of Fear Factory all those years. Does all the samplings.
He's the remanufacturer guy.
And he's above on this list, Fear Factory. I mean, look at you want to talk about a fall from grace, just, I mean, whatever you want to call it. I don't know, man. It's just, there's a lot going on. That's sad. That's sad. As a fan for years of this band, that is pathetic and sad that they are now down there.
They are way at the bottom. I'll be honest. Who is this middle band? Who is this middle band? Is that Bring Me the Horizon?
That's Bring Me the Horizon, yes.
All right. Mm. I don't think they're bigger than Fear Factory in historical terms.
Oh, I think they are now.
Are they now?
Absolutely.
Danny Elfman? Really?
I don't know what to say, man. I mean, you know what's funny? I mean, you look even up here, you got Swans. That's an old band from the 80s. I look at this, it's a really interesting.
Maybe it's not in order.
But that's not the point. If you look at the, I think it is, because if you look at the bands on the bottom, those are all the known. No, no one knows those bands. Look at those.
Yeah.
Look at the bottom two lines. Okay. Fear Factory, Wednesday 13. Now Wednesday 13. Let's be honest. He came into the Merle Dolls. I mean, he's got
he's got a cult following.
He's got a cult following. But Fear Factory was a massive band.
They were big. They were big.
I mean, D-Manufactured is a game-changing record for the genre.
The only thing I will, and I don't remember off the top, and I saw Fear Factory in the day several times. I don't remember them being a big drawing band.
Look,
I don't ever remember them playing like a 10,000 seater or anything.
Not a 10,000 seater, but they would pack the bigger clubs. You know what I mean? They packed the big clubs. The ones I've been to, look, I mean, in New York they did. Down in San Diego was the first show I saw when I moved down there. They packed that place.
Yeah. I've seen the times I've seen them, I don't think I've ever seen them headline. I've seen them, I know I saw them once with Blaze Bailey's Iron Maiden. That was a show.
Interesting, wow.
And one of my favorite moments ever, it was in this little club called Peabody's Down Under here in Cleveland.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And the club had poles in front of the stage.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, fucking Burton jumped off and clunked his head on the pole.
Did he really?
He dove off like he was diving into the crowd. It was boink.
And he nailed the pole. Oh, my God. He's a tall guy, Burton.
He is.
He ain't no small fry.
And he just didn't see it because it was dark and, you know, smoke and everything else.
Yeah.
And boonk, he just bonked his head.
Yeah. But, you know, actually, you do bring up a pretty good point, though. You're right. Is it more overseas that they're bigger than, if you want to look at it that way? Because, like I said, I'm not saying, yeah, they would sell out, you know, arenas or big seaters. Yeah. No, of course not. But for that time, you know, the late 90s, I mean, they were big.
They were big, but I don't think they were. I think because we loved them so much, we think they might have been a little bigger than
it
they
could
were.
Be.
Because let's talk about everybody that was big at that time. They were never going to play in front of Korn.
Mm.
They were never going to play in front of Limp Bizkit. They were never going to play in front of Machine Head. They were never going to play in front of Slipknot. They were never going to play in front of Type O. Type O might be close. But mm-hmm. they were never going to mm-hmm. be the headliner over Type O. Mm-hmm. I mean, at that time, Disturbed, I think, was right in that time frame, too.
Mm-hmm. They were, yeah.
And Mudvayne, no. Mudvayne was bigger, right from the start. Uh-huh. Maybe a Nothing Face.
They were bigger than them. I mean,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, they might have headlined over that, but
sure.
That's a pretty long way down for what we're saying.
I would have put them right with, back then, I would have put them with right on the same par as Machine Head. Not now, not in his 2000s. Machine Head took off once they, you know, mm-hmm. went back to be in a heavier band and not the new metal stuff. I think what happened to them was because they attached themselves so much to the new metal, and then they changed a little bit that when they went back, it might have been too late. I think a lot of people might have just been like, well, you're another one of these, just, you know. Yeah. These bands are one of these new metal bands, you know, and I think
Some reason they weren't able to pretend like it didn't happen like Rob Flynn did.
Yeah, well, I think they tried to, but what happened was Dino was gone.
Mm-hmm.
They put out that first record without him, which was just trying to keep the sound that he had. And they did a decent job. It wasn't a great record, the Archetype. It was decent. They had some good songs. The next one after that was the poor one, obviously, Transgression. And I think that's when, you know, they realized they needed Dino. They brought him back. And like I said, I think they tried to go super brutal heavy. And, you know, the bottom line is they've never just stuck to something and really just wrote it out. You know what I mean? I think that was just by that time it was too much. I think once the Hoagland thing failed, they were just done. I mean, it's like, you know, they tried to do that and he shit on them. He said mm-hmm. they were fucking horrible to work with, and they didn't want to do blah blah blah. And they and Dino's had this reputation of just being a tough guy to work. No one wants to work with him. Look at the Divine Heresy thing.
Yeah,
remember what happened with Tommy Vex? That big blow up in the media with that thing.
That's right. Yeah.
You know.
Well, and I wonder too if that's not a part of it. Is there were so many splinter bands that kind of came out of Fear Factory. That it almost diluted the value somewhat what was the one that started with an A that was like
Atreyu or something?
Not Atreyu, but it was something like that. It was like Atoria or something. I don't remember what it was called.
The band that they had.
Yeah, it was Christian and Raymond.
Oh yeah. I know what you're talking about. Arcata or something like that.
And then you had Divine Heresy for a couple of records as well. And, you know, I just wonder if people got to where they were like, that band's kind of done. Even when they did reform, people didn't care because they were diluted with all these other projects. And Ascension of the Watchers, you know, the first record comes in there. And, you know, they kind of diluted their brand a lot.
They did. Well, that's the point. I think they just really managed the band horrifically in terms of how they presented themselves, like you said, with the brand. They sucked at it. I mean, even look at it now. If you look at now, okay, so here they are. Dino gets a new band together. He's got Milo on vocals, who, listen, he gets a lot of good reviews for sounding like Burton, right? Live.
Right.
That I've seen. Now, I think that the stupidest thing that Dino's done is he's gone ahead and he's not just sounding like him. He wants him to be a carbon absolute copy of him. Mm-hmm. He's dressing like him. He's got the same hairdo Burton had in the 90s. He's up there on stage doing the same motions the way he sings with his leg up on the speaker, you know, on the cabinet and singing just like Burton did. It's pretty horrible what he's done. Then on top of that, you've got, okay, this guy promised everybody before they went out on tour last winter in 2022 with Static X, that there was going to be a song that we're going to release out there for everyone so they can see and sound what this sounds like. No song then and still no song to this day.
No, we still haven't.
How do you expect in this modern day of music where everything, people are putting out singles, you got to keep putting out music to stay relevant, and you want to tour and play on these festivals, and you still have no new music out. So no one knows what this guy can do yet.
He's touring on the basis of people watching YouTube videos, which always sound like shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they never sound real good. By the way, the name of that band, I looked it up real quick, was Arcaia.
Arcaia. Terrible name. That's why we can't remember it.
Well, that's why, because it's a horrible name. Arcaia.
Yeah. Terrible.
Dumb. I agree with you, man. I mean, even if it was just a re-recording of Replica or Cars or anything, any song that anybody would know from Fear Factory, anything would have given us, okay, this could be good. I want to go see it.
Yeah.
Now I got to rely on somebody with a 12-year-old iPhone and a shit blown out speakers video recording of it.
Yeah.
While they're waving their camera all around, rocking out.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. We all know, okay, people are saying he's doing a decent job replicating his voice. No pun intended. Okay, great. All right, so now where's the music? Where is the new song? One song. So Burton's got a song out now. He's got a show. Now, he's about to fuck himself, you know, because you look at it. Burton's going to start touring. And I'll tell you right now, people will go see him before they go to see Fear Factory. Okay, now they're both going to be fighting for those fans, right? Because I guarantee you, people aren't going to see both. You know what I mean? There's no way. Most people are going to probably.
You don't think?
I don't think so.
You don't think even once?
No. I think if Burton comes out and does a decent enough job with what he's doing, he's going to take those fans. There's no doubt in my mind. I don't think anybody is going to go like, you know what? Let me give me. I don't think so. Because it's not. Look, like you said, that is such a hard voice to replace. I mean, there's a lot of tough voices to replace that have gotten replaced, right? So I'm not saying it can't be done. But with this slow rolling with the new music, he has, think about Dino, he's got no band. Every time they play, every show they play, every tour they do, they've got a new rhythm section. It's just him and Milo. And think about it. There's only, how long is he going to keep doing this, Milo? How long is he going to sit around going, shit, you know, this isn't working? And then what are you going to do when that's done? I mean, he's just completely, he does not know how to fucking lead a band for the life of him, this guy. I mean, he's destroying the brand, the name, everything that was, I wish he would just stop, go out, do a new band, and then play Fear Factory songs with it. I mean, I know he's not going to do that because he's got the name and it makes sense to obviously keep the name.
It's all money.
Of course, money. Of course. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He'll get 10 grand to show up as Fear Factory. He'll get 2 grand to show up as, you know, King of Thieves or whatever he would name his band. But and by the way, just not for nothing, I just quickly looked up the article about Burton real quick. Mm-hmm. This part is certainly going to help him. $15 tickets.
I was going to mention that. Exactly.
$15 to see Burton Bell play in GZR and Fear Factory?
And there's two opening bands in that thing, too. So, exactly. $15.
That's solid. What do you think this tour with Cold Chamber? It ain't going to be $15.
Well, and there's your difference. You see, I mean, if you look at the difference between the two of them, whether it was in the press, how they are with their fans, how they are with the press, and so forth. Mm-hmm. Burton, he's great with his fans. You know, people like him. Yeah. He responds to people. He's genuine. He's the one I came out and said when Gino did that whole GoFundMe, whatever he did for the record, he was like, I my name is not attached to this thing. I got nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And you know, letting him know like this is a money grab by this guy. Now, whether it is or not, we don't know. I'm not saying it is or not. I can't, you know, I'm not going to speculate there. But sure. Bottom line is he comes off genuine, honest. He's coming out doing the songs. People, I think, you know, doing some Fear Factory. He's just doing something. He doesn't want to just go out there and sing Fear Factory songs.
Right.
I mean, he should just get to stay in the band and made a lot more money doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're going to see a happy guy, you know, who's got no pressure. And he's already got a loyal fan base. You know, everyone who loves his voice is going to go see him. That's the bottom line.
And he might sound better because he's not miserable.
Well, he's not miserable, and he's also going to play maybe songs that he can do better live.
Yeah,
and
probably also songs that he's not burned up on.
That too, exactly.
The weird thing about Bert. I mean, you've met him, right? You've interviewed him, but I've met him in person too.
Yeah, real nice guy, man.
He's an artist, though.
Yes, he is. He's an artist guy. Yes.
So he's a guy that once he's played it X number of times, then he's done with
it. He's done with it, yeah.
And yet he's still playing it, where you could see where that, you know, why rehearse? Because I got to do the same fucking thing over and over again that I don't like.
And he was pretty vocal about not being really into the Fear Factory stuff for a long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's no secret. You know what I mean? That's why he did the Watchers. That's his stuff. His stuff is the industrial, gothic-y,
yeah,
you know, that kind of stuff. That's what he enjoys. You know, he's always been pretty honest about that.
Yeah.
He's a very industrial guy. So, but I'm just thinking, like, it's you know, I mean, really, because of how Dino has looked really bad in the press, how he botched, you know, look, you know me, I was all about giving him a chance.
Yeah, you were.
Until he botched that shit last year where
that
he
first
fucked
show.
Over, first show, he fucked over everybody here. You do that with the first show, you're rolling out your new singer, man. That is not going to do yourself any favors. And it looks like it's continuing to get worse. Cause like I said, no new music. They're on the bottom of these festival.
These festivals. Yeah.
And I mean, you're just a little blip there with just a name. You don't talk about band versus brand. There you go. That brand is barely keeping that band alive on these tours.
Well,
it's sad. It's just sad.
It's unfortunate. Sad. Yeah.
It is. And it's going to be interesting to see, but if I'm him right now, you better get a fucking song out there fast or people are going to forget you real quick, man.
Yeah.
Especially if there's good reviews of this Burton show next month. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, I have to think that we're going to get a song in the next 30 days.
Well, you think so, right? I mean, after this, you would think he'd have
you would
to.
But I mean, otherwise the tour itself, the whole reason of having him on the Cold Chamber tour doesn't sell a single ticket.
Exactly. I mean,
people mm-hmm. now, and correct me if you think I'm wrong on this, Burton has announced a show,
mm-hmm.
which means people are now waiting for a tour announcement.
Exactly.
And then people, if people like you were saying, have to decide between A or B, they're not going to buy the Fear Factory ticket. First of all, I don't think that the Cold Chamber audience is the Fear Factory audience, personally.
It's not.
I don't think their music really jives too well together.
It's not.
But. That being said, if I'm only going to one, which everybody is broke right now because of the economy,
yeah,
you know, I can go to this one for $15, this one for $100. Which one do I really want to see?
Of course, yep.
You know, I'll wait a minute for the tour announcement, and then I'll see if Burton comes to my town.
And you know how it is too with vocalists. You know, when you're talking about the main draw to a lot of people to that band
is the singer. Yeah,
is the singer. And now he's doing his own thing. And like you said, he's going to play some Fear Factory. I mean, you're not going to, it's going to be tough to beat that.
Yeah.
And like I said, he once again, this guy, he really doesn't know what he's fucking doing. Dino. I mean, I'm sorry. And like I said, it saddens me because like I said, I've been this huge fan.
Me too.
And all these, it's just, but every time now they're becoming, it's like a joke. That name's almost become a fucking joke. Yeah, and it's really fucking sad.
It's tough. It's definitely tough. And, you know, I hate bashing on it because, let's face it, when we talked to him earlier, what, 2 years ago or whatever, he couldn't have been nicer. He really was. He was really nice, and he was forthcoming, and he answered hard questions. And
he is an interview. So I
do not want to say, well, this guy's just a total piece of shit.
Sure. Because
for me, personally, any time I've interacted with Dino has been good.
Same here. I always had a positive interaction with myself. I met him in person.
Yeah.
He was absolutely great to me when I met him in person. Absolutely.
So I don't want to disparage him that way. But on a business standpoint.
Yeah, business standpoint, exactly.
Those of us that are the consumers of that business are looking at a bad deal. Right now it looks like a very bad deal.
It's not something you're gonna spend your money on.
No.
It's, you know?
We've already spent our money. Like, for me personally, I spent my loyalty money already. My loyalty money was spent when it was called Divine Heresy.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
I was loyal to Dino. I bought both of those records. I went and saw those shows. Mm-hmm. I was loyal.
Yep.
You know, I was a loyal fan of what that guy did. But he's come back, and he's said things that have not come true, whether it was the first show. Like, I know I'm in Cleveland. You were super stoked to see that first show.
I really was, man.
And I remember you and several other friends of mine that live up there were absolutely crushed that not only was their chance to see the first show with the new singer taken away, but it was taken away for a shit reason that the other bands didn't seem to have the same problem with.
That was the point. You know what I mean? It could have been avoided, and it could have happened. It was just the way the whole thing panned out was just terrible. You know?
For God's sakes, what band waits till the day of the first show of a tour to go to the city?
I don't even want to relive that whole fucking thing because I got booted. I mean, I was so pissed. I got booted off their fan page. They booted me off the fan page because I was saying, why didn't you take a different route? When you know you can't, when it's that raining and cold, you can't drive up that way. It always gets closed down. And they didn't like it because I was saying some shit. I even had some guys like, was it Sean Glass, that guy going off on me? You know, that guitarist that we interviewed some years ago, Repentance.
I know Sean.
He was, you know, it's not his fault. It's like, yeah, come on, dude. Everyone who lives here, I don't want to get into it.
Yeah, his fault was that he didn't go up a day before like every other band does.
Static X is from L.A. Tony Campos was in Fear Factor. He's up there with fucking Static X. He was up here. Yeah. Every band was here except for them.
Yeah.
Just
it was a poor management fuck up. And I'll even forgive it as a fuck up, but it's not the time you can have a fuck up.
No, not on your first show with a singer replacing an iconic singer like that, man. You can't.
Metallica launches tours in Prague and places like that. And guess what? They get there.
They get there.
Their fucking $1 zillion stage gets there.
I mean, let's think about this. Think about how this sounds. Okay, we live in California, West Coast.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell me I couldn't get there because of the snow. I mean, unless you're in the mountains of Lake Tahoe or the Sierras or whatever out here, man, there is no such thing as that.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Out here, that might fly.
Of course.
In Ohio, that might fly.
I can fly where you are. Not out here.
Not in California.
It got snowed out in California. That is like, I mean, are you kidding me? Yeah.
What's next? The rain out in Arizona? Stop
exactly,
it.
I know. well, like I said, I mean, it's going to be interesting. Well, just to wrap this one up, I mean, we'll see if he gets it. He's got to get a song out there fast, man.
Yeah, he does.
Because he's going to lose business. And like you said, $15. Burton's planning it very, very wisely. And it's going to be interesting to see what, it's just, again, just to wrap it up, man, it's just, like I said, this was one of my top three favorite bands of all time at one point.
Yeah.
And just as sad to see the diluted, the brand just getting so watered down. And just, it's almost just like, it's just there, like it's, you know, I mean, the fact that Cold Chamber is now a stronger brand than Fear Factory, it's just sad.
Yeah. It's not an active band. It's never really been a full-time active band, except for what, about 5 years?
That's it. Exactly. They didn't last long at all. Three albums, I think they had. And that was it.
But the third one even was they were already done.
Once it came out, I don't even know if they toured on that thing. It was
I don't think they did. And I think Dez was already doing Devil Driver. Devil Driver,
he was. That's right.
And and like they hated each other, but they were like contractually because remember they put that album out, didn't do any press, didn't do any promotion. Then they put out that Scab album that was like shit from the studio.
Yeah,
that was you know just a bunch of bullshit that they had. So I think they only had like a 3 to 5 year window that they were actually a band.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
I saw them a bunch of times when they were band, and
I saw them. I saw them at Ozfest, right. And yeah, they were good, man. You know, I was a fan of that first record, but I listened to it now. It didn't hold up. You know, I go back and listen to Cold Chamber now. I'm like,
Truck.
I think is well. I always liked him. I liked his voice. That was my favorite part of Cold Chamber. Was Dez's growls and stuff. But
well, now that now he so sold me on Devil Driver that I can't even do the Cold Chamber.
I can't either, dude. I can't either. It's
like
it's,
I can listen to this hip hoppy shit, or I can just listen to straight up death rage. I'll go with that.
Well, and that's you know, and it'll kind of lead us into our next segment in a way because you know I always looked at Dez like you want to talk about a guy who really. I mean, you talk about a wise move, you know what I mean? Maybe, I don't know if he just saw the right, but everyone, like you said, everybody knew he had a great voice, Dez, right? Yeah. With Cold Chamber. He was just with a band that really, he couldn't really do what he wanted, you know, could do that kind of crazy metal vocal style. And Devil Driver, you know, first album was a little on the new metal tip.
Yeah, still, a little bit.
But that second album is when they came blazing and it was straight up the groove thrash stuff. And, you know, I that to me is how, you know, that was smart. I mean, he didn't just stick around in the new metal, you know, arena and hope to catch on to something else. He went right for the heavy shit. And then, yeah, I mean, you know, that was that whole blow up when Devil Driver got on that tour. Cataclysm kicked off.
Yeah.
And Maurizio went nuts. Like, this is a fucking new metal guy. And you can't get him off for us, man. I remember that whole thing. I forget the name of that tour that was on. It might have been
That was
Summer Slaughter. Was it Summer Slaughter?
Tour? Something like that. I know that was when Cataclysm was touring on As I Slither, whatever that album was called.
Yeah.
You know,
Surrounding on Fire. Yeah.
Yeah. What kills me about that is now, 30 years later, whatever it's been since then, my two favorite extreme bands of all time are Cataclysm and Devil
and
Driver.
And Death Driver. That's funny.
Those are my go-tos that I listen to every single week I listen to those bands.
Yeah.
You know, it really is amazing that they started off absolutely despising each other. And I think they've toured now since, too.
Interesting, really.
I think they have toured together since. Like, they worked it out, too. But, yeah, I remember that as well. And it was a great move by Dez. I think Dez, I don't know if you've met Dez or whatnot. I've actually had quite a bit of opportunity to talk to him a little more at length than even just interviews.
Okay.
Because we did a promotion with him when I was on WMMS. Mm. And it was the coolest promotion. You know how bands, they always, come out and get a signed guitar, you know, all that kind of bullshit, right?
Sure.
Dez had a promotion that he did with us where they were touring in like a little RV, you know, just a little RV. And it was come and barbecue with Devil Driver. It was the goofiest shit ever. But we had like five winners. We all met on the side of the Agora. Mm-hmm. They brought out a little grill and a bunch of charcoal and a bunch of lawn chairs. Okay. And they passed around beers. Dez cooked on the grill. And we ate chicken and, you know, potatoes and shit.
Nice.
Just had a like an old-fashioned barbecue.
Well, it's an intimate thing, and that's what kind of helps bring in fans, you know what I mean, when you do something intimate like that.
But it wasn't like normal thing. Like, you know, I mean, you've done enough meet and greets and whatever. The shit's 5 minutes long or 10 minutes or maybe if you're lucky, 30.
True.
These guys hung out for probably 3 hours. Mm. And the only reason they stopped was because they were getting called to go do sound check. It was like they would have stayed out there. If they didn't have to play, they'd have stayed out there all night. I mean, it was that kind of everybody was just shooting the shit, telling stories about Ozfest and, you know, and not just the band. The band was telling their Ozfest stories, and this guy was telling a story about how he met him at Ozfest, and it was raining, and it was this. You know, I mean, it was just like it was a really cool moment. And where I'm going with this is that Dez is a cool guy, but he's a smart guy. He's a guy, when you talk to him at length, you realize he's not just a dumb rock guy.
No, you can't be. You can't have done what he's done and be dumb, dude. I mean, that's no. You know, you just can't. You know what I mean? And yeah, I've just from hearing him on interviews and stuff, yeah, you could see he's a very, you know, he's a smart guy. You know what I mean? No doubt. He knows what he's doing.
He tries to look like the dumb rock guy with the tattoos on his face and all that shit.
Sure.
But he's not. Like, if I'm not mistaken, he has his own management company now, and like half the bands that are out there are signed to it. And
that's right. He does it. He was, for a while, he owned his own cannabis business too. He was doing, growing cannabis. Obviously I think he's doing quite well. You're not seeing Devil Driver out there every 6 months touring. So, you know, he's doing okay. If that's
he's doing fine. Exactly.
Yeah.